Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Many of the emergency powers the state was using to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic expired along with the governor's disaster declaration early Sunday morning. But it's not yet clear what impacts that will have on everything from vaccine distribution to curbside pickup and delivery of alcohol. Governor Mike Dunleavy and members of his administration gathered Sunday to lay out some of the changes.
You'll see that we have no mandated advisories now.
Some things, like travel testing, are clear. Alaska residents and non-residents traveling to the state are no longer required by the state to get a pre-travel COVID-19 test or to test upon arrival.
But if you wish to get on the plane at the airport without a test, you can do that.
The state advises that travelers do it, and it will still be an option to test at the airport through the end of June. But that doesn't mean that people can travel throughout the state freely without being tested. Some cities, like Juneau, are still requiring it. The administration laid out a COVID-19 transition plan, which Dunleavy characterized as moving Alaska toward normalcy. But there are a lot of other parts of the state's COVID-19 response that are going to be impacted by the lapsed disaster declaration. Some 200 regulations that had been suspended will be going back into effect. That will impact everything from curbside pickup of alcohol to telemedicine.
None of that stuff is changing as of today.
Instead, commissioners will review those policies over the next several weeks. Dunleavy says they'll advise him on what needs to stay in place and what he should allow to lapse. One other thing that isn't clear is how the state will continue allocating vaccines. Director of Public Health Heidi Hedberg said the state's disaster declaration and the plan it submitted to the federal government gave it the legal authority that it needs to distribute vaccines into communities.
And given that we feel like we will be able to continue distributing the vaccines to Alaskans, we'll move through the month of March.
What's still unclear is how the state will legally distribute vaccines into communities after that point. Hedberg also said that the state's response to community requests may be slower. Alaska Department of Public Safety Commissioner Amanda Price resigned, according to a news release on Friday. And in a Facebook post first reported by the blog Alaska Landmine, Price says Governor Mike Dunleavy forced her to resign. Price says she was told that the administration is, quote, taking public safety in a different direction, end quote. Price says she believes she was removed because she advocated to improve 911 dispatch services in rural communities in ways that Dunleavy opposed, and because she made a personnel decision the governor didn't agree with. Price goes on to say that she is disappointed in the governor and that, quote, candidate Dunleavy and his philosophies are not how Governor Dunleavy governs, end quote. Price faced a contentious confirmation vote in 2019 when Dunleavy nominated her for the post. She had been accused of chronic absenteeism at her previous job. This is the second abrupt departure from the administration in February. On February 12th, Acting Attorney General Ed Sniffen resigned as the Anchorage Daily News and ProPublica reporting on allegations of past sexual misconduct. Dunleavy has appointed Kelly Howell to act as interim commissioner until Price can be replaced. As the Alaska legislature works on the next state budget, the University of Alaska already faces a $20 million reduction under a funding compact with Governor Mike Dunleavy. It's the final cut in the three-year, $70 million reduction Regents agreed to in 2019. Addressing the Senate Finance Committee on Thursday, UA Interim President Pat Pitney said combined with cuts made since 2014, state support for UA has dropped by $120 million. She said that's resulted in the elimination of 900 full-time and 1,500 part-time positions. Additional job losses are expected.
Between 50 and 70 faculty and staff.
Pitney stressed that the job cuts will primarily be made through attrition and retirement, as most major academic program reductions have already occurred.
There may be one or two more on the margin, but the lion's share of programs and the campuses we have are here to stay.
Pitney said the final year reduction under the compact will primarily be addressed in three ways.
We're trying to do as much as we can through the administrative side as well as the facility side and revenue side.
Pitney said the university is focused on rebuilding community and student confidence in remaining programs. She said the UA student headcount has dropped 30% since 2014, much of that in the last 2 years.
We've sized down. We need that stability going forward to regain our students.
Pitney told the committee that the COVID-19 pandemic has additionally hurt UA finances and asked for state help with $16 million in virus impacts not covered by federal relief programs. A federal appeals court has sided with conservation and indigenous groups by ordering work to stop at a major oil project on Alaska's North Slope. Anchorage Daily News reported that the decision Saturday by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals will stop on-the-ground work for the winter at the Willow Project. It's operated by ConocoPhillips in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. The move comes in a lawsuit from groups arguing that the Trump administration didn't follow environmental laws before approving the project. ConocoPhillips didn't immediately say whether it plans to appeal the work stoppage. The family of a Kodiak man shot and killed at a naval facility near his home say they're still seeking answers 8 months after their son's death. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, military officials have released little information, saying the investigation remains ongoing.
Jason Vinberg was born and raised in Kodiak, where he spent most of his life.
You know, he grew up here on Spruce Cape. Our house is probably maybe a half to three quarters of a mile from there.
That's his father, Tony Furio. He's referring to the nearby Naval Special Forces Training Center. It's a gated compound at the end of Spruce Cape, a peninsula just outside of town. But on the evening of June 13th, his 30-year-old son entered the base after 10 p.m. His family says they still don't know why, and that's troubling them. All that's officially known comes from two short statements, one from the feds and one from the state. One says that Vinberg had tried to enter one of the buildings of the Naval Special Warfare Compound. It says he was confronted by a Naval Special Forces member, and quote, events led to the service member using deadly force. Alaska State Troopers offered a few more details. They say Vinberg had been tapping on the building's windows with a knife. His stepmother, Esther Furio, says troopers told her as much when they visited the next day.
This is a story the trooper had said. Jason did not leave. The guy on duty said that Jason came towards him and had a knife, and he was shot. That's kind of the short version, but it is all on film.
Nobody from the family has seen the video, if it does exist. The Naval Criminal Investigative Service is leading the investigation and won't comment until that's complete. Family members say they're confused by what they've been told.
He was very nonviolent. He's never been aggressive or anything like that. It just totally sounds out of character for Jason. But the trooper said that he'd seen the film and it looked like a knife. Now, everything was turned over to NCIS, so we don't know if any knife was ever really found. We don't know anything else about that part.
Vinberg's death certificate indicates he was shot multiple times. Esther Furio says he wasn't carrying a wallet or any identification. They learned of his death nearly 24 hours later. The call came from Vinberg's wife in Utah, mother of his two sons, who were 5 and 11 at the time.
He has his son's name tattooed on his forearm, and that's how they finally identified him.
That death certificate and their son's cremated remains are the only things the family has received. His father says he wonders whether race could have been a factor in the guard's decision to open fire.
He's Native. He has curly hair and stuff.
Jason Vinberg's mother is Aleutic.
To me, as we've seen through our country, with the police department, what's happened? What happened to all these people being killed?
It's hard to answer the broader question of whether Vinberg's appearance played a role. Statewide reporting of officials' use of lethal force doesn't exist.
I think that Jason's family is asking fair questions about how their son was killed, why deadly force was used.
That's Alex Cleghorn, legal and policy director of the Alaska Native Justice Center in Anchorage.
And deserves some level an answer about what happened so that they can attempt to as more fully comprehend and move on, perhaps, as much as one ever could from the death of a son or a father or a husband.
Cleghorn has cultural ties to Kodiak and was asked by the family to look into the case. He says the fact that the shooting occurred on a federal military base may be slowing things down.
I think that what is challenging is how long it takes for families to get answers.
A cursory look into Jason Vinberg's past shows some small stuff from his teens. But it's kid stuff. Driving off the road, a count of underage drinking, buying tobacco. His father says he spent a year at a state facility for at-risk youth in Anchorage. His son sometimes struggled with drugs. In his 20s, Vinberg was arrested for property crimes in Utah. But the family says nothing in his past pointed to violence or threats. Esther Furio says the family is willing to accept the truth, however unpleasant.
You know, everybody has their struggles, and that we're not saying our son is perfect, but there was so many good qualities and so many loving qualities, and he was so loved. And we've always said that, you know, the truth will set you free. And we have prayed that at one time the truth about what really happened to Jason will come out.
Coast Alaska contacted federal prosecutors with a list of questions. Later that afternoon, Tony and Esther Furio got a phone call from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage. They're about ready to discuss the case next month inside the Kodiak Police Station. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
School officials in Alaska have implemented a new policy requiring masks at sporting events last week in response to coronavirus outbreaks at a half dozen Matanuska Susitna Borough School District schools. Anchorage Daily News reported Friday that three large high schools in the district, Colony, Palmer, Wasilla, are among five facilities currently closed because of the outbreaks. It's unclear when they are expected to reopen. Public health officials say some of the confirmed COVID-19 cases started with students mixing at school lunches, but most are attributed to extracurricular activities, including sports. And finally, a chairlift providing access to the upper portion of the Eagle Crest ski area has been damaged by last week's high winds in Juneau. It'll be out of operation for at least this week, likely longer. Ski area general manager Dave Scanlon says the wind slipped two chairs up and over the haul rope for the Ptarmigan chairlift. It happened near a chairlift tower located above the ski run called Insane. The two chairs then got caught in the tower when the chairlift was started up Thursday morning. One chair was partially dislodged, the other chair was completely disconnected and fell, and the haul rope derailed from the damaged pulleys on the tower. Wind speeds of between 67 and 72 miles per hour were recorded at Eagle Crest after 2 o'clock Thursday morning. No one was injured, and no one was on the chairlift when it happened. Scanlon says they planned on assessing the damage and making repairs to the chairlift starting Saturday, but he doesn't know how long it will take. The other upper mountain chairlift, Black Bear, on the east side, as well as Hooter and Porcupine on the lower mountain, are still in operation. And that's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, February 15th, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.